Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review for Thursday, October 29th, 2020. We'll start with an article on the front page headlined, COVID, the Local Impact, IHSA, Game On, Despite Pritzker, High Schools to Play Basketball, by Joey Wagner, Bloomington. Consider Wednesday's news a bit of a bombshell. One day after Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker and the Illinois Department of Public Health moved basketball from a medium risk to a high-risk sport and put winter sports on hold, the Illinois High School Association announced it was plugging ahead with basketball anyway. The decision came after a special board of directors meeting on Wednesday. IHSA Executive Director Craig Anderson said the board was caught off guard by Pritzker's announcement. We felt like it was something that we could do safely, Anderson said. We, throughout the fall, tried to be good partners and really leaned on the IDPH and Governor's Office for their guidance and how we move forward. At this point, without basketball in the winter, we were going to have a really big hole in our winter season with some limited activities for kids. In terms of safety, I think the guidelines put together by our Sports Medicine Advisory Committee really lent themselves to making competition safe for students. The season is set to begin on November 16th for practices with games on November 30th. The board voted to move wrestling from the winter season to the summer season, which will run from April 19th to June 26, 2021. It's a relief, said MacArthur Jr. Brylan Phillips, who is in contact with a handful of Division I basketball programs. Yesterday, a lot of the minds of high school athletes were probably all over the place. Seniors scared they weren't going to have a season, not going to get that chance to get that college recruitment in. Kids like me were scared that coaches weren't going to be able to come watch them or even see them virtually. Said MacArthur senior guard Taya Davis, it's pretty big for me because I actually have no offers. Last night, I was actually stressing about it. I was talking to Brylan Phillips about it. I was stressing to him. I don't have any offers. It made me think about going to a prep school. Now that they're doing that, I think it's awesome. The board will follow the guidance of the IHSA Sport Medicine Advisory Committee, SMAC, and will allow boys and girls basketball to begin practices per IHSA Return to Activities 2.0 on November 16th. Contests can begin on November 30th within an Illinois COVID region or within a conference. Masks will be worn throughout, even for competing players, and as of now, a limit of 50 people indoors will be in place, which effectively means no fans in the stands after the players, coaches, officials, and volunteers for each team are accounted for. The decision to go forward and against the IDPH and governor's office was a bold step for the IHSA and will essentially put the decision to participate in basketball this winter in the hands of local school districts. I really don't know what's going to happen from now to November 30th, Anderson said. To me, it's a really big deal to say to government officials or the Department of Public Health that we're going to go in a different direction than how you're advising. I have no idea how that's going to play out for us. I remain hopeful that the decision of our board will play out successfully for the benefit of our kids. I don't know a percentage of how I feel. I'm cautiously optimistic that we'll proceed with whatever hurdles we have to travel and to accomplish yet this winter. I'm hopeful that will happen. Pritzker addressed the IHSA's decision in his daily press conference. We've told school districts what the rules are, and I think they all know, Pritzker said. So IHSA may have their views of it, but school districts know what the rules are. And it's unfortunate, but they would probably be taking on legal liability if they went ahead and move beyond what the state has set as the mitigation standard. Anderson said legal recourse against school districts remains an unknown. He said he pitched the idea of proceeding with winter sports to Deputy Governor Jesse Ruiz on Tuesday and heard back on Wednesday. Anderson said he relayed that information to the board of directors. Jesse indicated there could be some ramifications from Illinois State Board of Education for our public school, and there could be ramifications from the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity from our private schools if they go forward against the guidance, Anderson said. The legal question remains in the unknown, I think. I didn't resource any of our legal counsel in relation to this because, honestly, when we went into the meeting, I was really unsure of where our board was going to go with their decision-making. I really didn't have the time. Based upon Jesse Ruiz's response that there could be potential ramifications, and I shared that with our board, I think the board thought those are going to have to be decisions that our local districts will determine. This is a step forward to really say as an association that we think we can do it safely and we want it for our students. Anderson cited data from teams participating in fall contact days when schools were scrimmaging and said, "We really didn't have any indications, and I don't know that anybody could point to circumstances where that went poorly or cases were spiking as a result of that activity." In a statement earlier on Wednesday, the board addressed mental health issues surrounding a lack of sports for high school issues. Mounting challenges from increased mental health issues among our students to a shrinking calendar that limits our ability to move sports seasons this school year were instrumental in this decision to move forward with basketball as scheduled, the statement read. We see our students regularly leaving the state to play sports or covertly continuing to play locally. Students can be better protected in the high school setting, and the board remains steadfast that playing under IHSA rules and SMAC mitigation is the safest way to conduct athletics at this juncture. Illinois is a large and diverse state, and the IHSA membership is reflective of that. We understand that this decision will impact each high school and district differently. Some schools who remain in remote learning may not be able to start winter sports on time, and we feel for those in that situation. However, we have also learned that we cannot continue to look down the road to a season that may never come. The point remains that there's a path to play high school basketball in the state of Illinois after a wild 24 hours that appeared to dull hope for players, coaches, and fans, only to have it reinvigorated on Wednesday afternoon. Maroa Forsyth boys basketball head coach Aaron Ennis said he was conducting the final contact days when his Apple Watch, which receives text messages from his phone, began buzzing nearly nonstop. He knew something was up. Ennis clicked into a message and read the news that basketball had been moved to a higher risk. Unsure of the validity, he didn't share that information with his team and instead chose to close the contact days on a high note. Pritzker's Tuesday announcement set off a string of confusion. If you would have said, "Is there a chance basketball was going to get delayed?" I think any person that was honest would say, "Yeah, I think there's a chance it's going to get delayed," Ennis said. I was fully expecting to have something more, kind of like official, laid out by the IHSA Wednesday. It was a little disappointing it came out Tuesday from the IDPH with what felt like little or no coordination between the IDPH and IHSA to kind of give us a full-scale picture of what this means. Instead, it's kind of what feels like, let's get out in front of the IHSA-type situation. Now, we're kind of left in confusion when there really shouldn't be any. Decatur Public Schools has not participated in extracurricular programs since going to an all-virtual learning format, including all fall sports. That stance remains the same, and the district will vote on returning to in-person learning on Friday. If the school remains doing virtual-only learning, DPS Athletic Coordinator Joe Caputo said the position to not participate in extracurriculars has not changed. DPS is going to make the last call for DPS, and a lot of it is going to hinge on Friday's return to learn plan, Caputo said. If there's a change in in-person learning, then everything will roll downhill after that. And if it stays remote, then everything will roll downhill after that. Phillips is just glad there's hope. It's still one more hurdle, but we've gotten through so much already. I mean, we've looked for the positive of everything else. We might as well look for the positive of this outcome, too, Phillips said. Hopefully, they look at it as an opportunity to send us back now that they're going to let us play sports. Hopefully, they'll let us come back, and hopefully, we get to play. COVID, the local response. The testing continues. Whatever the weather, crossing healthcare, in it for the long haul. By Jeanette Beckett, Decatur. Some days have been extremely hot. Some days have included high winds, and others have included rain. And now, with the arrival of fall, the days are getting colder. Through it all, Crossing Healthcare has served as the primary provider of coronavirus testing to the Decatur community, with drive-through locations at the Decatur Civic Center and at its clinic at 320 East Central Avenue. And it will continue to do so as long as services are needed, officials said. Nikita Cook, a nurse practitioner with Crossing Healthcare, began administering COVID-19 tests on the west side of the center's facility during the heat of the summer. Temperatures are more winter-like now, but it's okay, Cook said. When temperatures are extreme, they put us in this, she said, referring to a small trailer with air conditioning and heat they can visit between patients. Keeping our team members out of the elements while continuing to meet the community's need for ongoing access to testing is our priority, said Tanya Andrix, CEO of Crossing Healthcare. With that goal in mind, steps are being taken to provide for a more weather-friendly facility where COVID-19 testing can continue throughout the winter if necessary. Crossing Healthcare has been working with the City of Decatur and contractor Romano Company to modify an existing building on the Crossing campus. The facility will allow staff to provide testing in a weather-controlled situation. We're hopeful that we will transition the drive-through testing activities from the Civic Center to this new location by the end of November, Andrix said. The facility will be able to convert from mass testing to mass immunizations, said Julie M. Brilli, Crossing Chief Development and Planning Officer. It will still be a drive-through fashion, Brilli said. We want to keep the staff safe, but also meet the needs of the community. Unlike the Civic Center location, which has seen long lines of cars snaking their way through the parking lot in recent weeks, the Crossing site is much less congested. It's a little slower pace because it is our patients, Cook said, not the public in general. According to Andrix, the Decatur Civic Center testing site has about 250 to 350 people served each day. Staffing includes 8 to 10 people at the site. There are always 2 to 3 people working inside the mobile unit, entering orders into the IDPH system for each specimen, along with the team members you see outside gathering information and collecting the test, Andrix said. The Illinois Department of Public Health is staffing the site this week, giving the Crossing team a needed break. They offered to come out this week, Brilli said, about the pop-up site. Crossing Healthcare staff will return on Monday, November 2nd, then receive another break from the IDPH staff in November. Providing healthcare during a pandemic has required all healthcare providers to change how they approach their work. Increased infection prevention measures have become normal, Andrix said. We are all paying attention to how we deliver care to ensure we are protecting our patients and staff, she said. Providing telehealth options for patients who have health conditions that leave them highly vulnerable has become an important tool for our team. Scheduling, as well as routes and transportation through the buildings, are important for patients who are acutely ill and the people who are well and need preventative care. We must continue to provide services like prenatal care and well-child visits for immunizations, and have made many changes to ensure we do this in a safe manner, Andrix said. Local and state. National award goes to Decatur Park District by Allison Petty, Decatur. The Decatur Park District won its division in a national award program that aims to recognize excellence in communities across the country. The district said on its Facebook page Tuesday night that it won the National Gold Medal Award, which comes from the American Academy for Park and Recreation Administration, in partnership with the National Recreation and Park Association. Decatur won the top honor among communities with a population of 30,001 to 75,000. Other finalists were in Evanston, Illinois, Coppell, Texas, and Centerville, Ohio. The award recognizes communities that demonstrate excellence in long-range planning, resource management, and innovative approaches to delivering superb park and recreation services with fiscally sound business practices, according to the National Recreation and Park Association. Agencies are invited to apply for the award at the beginning of each calendar year. Finalists are announced in the spring, and the top awards are announced each fall. COVID, local, state. COVID forces Macon County Circuit Clerk's office closure. Macon County reports 4 more deaths, 87 additional cases, by Tony Reed, Decatur. A COVID-19 outbreak is prompting the closure to the public of the Macon County Circuit Clerk's office on Thursday and Friday. The news came the same day Macon County health officials announced 4 more residents have died of coronavirus and another 87 have tested positive for the disease. The latest deaths bring the county's total to 57. To date, the county has reported 3,332 positive cases. Region 6, which includes Macon County, saw its rate hit 8.1%, meaning if it remains above 8% for 2 more days, additional restrictions will be imposed by the state. Circuit Clerk Sherry Doty said Wednesday she closed her office to help protect visitors and the remaining staff who will still be working and carrying out regular duties like filing emergency orders of protection, answering phone queries, emails, and case e-filing. Doty said her office had 1 confirmed infection and 2 other staffers had been tested and she fears are likely to be positive for the disease when the results come back. Those 2 were showing symptoms, and I think they've got it, she added. Doty said shutting the office down temporarily was a precaution, while the results were awaited, and to offer protection against further spread to both the public and staff. I just want to try and keep everyone safe while the tests get done, and we try to reorganize things, Doty added, who supervises a total staff of 24. She said COVID-positive staffer works in bookkeeping. The employees with symptoms and awaiting test results work in the civil case section and the criminal case section. The office where these workers were based is deep in the back of the Macon County Courthouse on the entry level. Doty said the front payment office near the main entrance would remain open to the public. I know we've got people with child support who depend on that money. I know it's important to keep that office open, added Doty. What's less clear is what will happen going forward if the number of infections among staff at the courthouse, which recently had a judge sick with the disease but who has since recovered, increases. Doty said she should know the results of the 2 staffers being tested Thursday, and she would make her plans after that. The main thing right now is keeping the public safe and my staff safe, she said. Presiding Judge A.G. Weber IV said he was in touch with Doty several times a day and kept a careful watch on what was going on. He said, so far, what was happening was not disrupting the work of the court. We're all being patient and understanding, and we're able to conduct the business of the court so far, he added. We don't anticipate a 2-day closure of the clerk's office will affect us perceptively, but if it goes on longer, it potentially could. Weber said all judges and the courtroom clerks who worked closely with them were well, but he did confirm that a court reporter is in quarantine after she tested positive. He said screening at the courthouse, a mask mandate, and extensive sanitizing had been effective in keeping the virus at bay. So far, we have avoided major problems, and all I can do is hope our proactive measures and our luck hold, he said. Contact numbers. The Macon County Circuit Clerk's office phone numbers are, for civil, 424-1461 or 424-1454. For criminal, 421-0274 or 421-0272. For traffic, 424-1439 or 424-1451. For child support, 424-1457. EPA Farm Bureau to continue cooperation. Herald and Review, Decatur. Officials from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency Region 5 and the Illinois Farm Bureau have shared a good relationship in recent years, working together to address shared challenges. During a meeting Tuesday in Decatur, the 2 sides signed a formal agreement, officially referred to as a Memorandum of Understanding, to keep those channels of communication open. The agriculture industry plays a vital role to the health of the region's economy and environment. This Memorandum of Understanding strengthens the administration's commitment to partnering with the agricultural community, said EPA Region 5 Administrator Kurt Feid. We look forward to continuing our work together to further support our farmers while protecting the environment, providing a win-win for the state of Illinois. Feid and U.S. Representative Rodney Davis toured Brown and Brown Farms in Decatur on Tuesday to see its operations and speak with farmers about initiatives to protect water quality and soil health. Illinois Farm Bureau members appreciated the opportunity to host U.S. EPA Region 5 staff and Congressman Davis for a roundtable discussion regarding conservation efforts within the agricultural community at the field, county, and watershed scales, said Illinois Farm Bureau President Rich Gubert Jr. in the statement. We look forward to expanding our collaborative activities toward our shared goal through this voluntary partnership. Officials say the agreement will improve the overall approach of economically viable agricultural practices while also benefiting the environment over the next 5 years. Three-year-old's death being investigated by Garrett Karsten, Decatur. Authorities continue to investigate the death of a three-year-old child following a Monday afternoon emergency response to the 1900 block of East Cantrell Street. Decatur Police Sergeant David Pruitt said medical personnel and police responded to the area around 4:48 p.m. after an emergency call reported the three-year-old to be in medical distress. The child was taken to HSHS St. Mary's Hospital and pronounced dead later, according to Pruitt. No other information was available. Higher education. Milligan offers new deal for local students. Macon County area students can get lower tuition, by Valerie Wells, Decatur. Milligan University is offering a new initiative for Macon County students, the Macon Promise. Students who live or go to school in Macon County, plus students in the Cerro Gordo and Central A&M districts and Richland Community College students, can attend Milligan for a reduced tuition rate of $26,000 per year, with that rate guaranteed for their entire four-year college career. The rate applies to all new students, including college students whose home is in Macon County, but who are attending another institution and transferred to Milligan. The rate is effective in fall 2021. This is very exciting, said Sarah Chupenis, Vice President of Enrollment and Marketing at the university. It's new and we're really excited to be able to offer this to Macon County students. For Macon County students, especially during this pandemic, finances are a concern on everyone's mind. And this is a way for us to help families have a little relief in knowing the financial certainty and benefit of what tuition will be for 4 years. Milligan tuition is normally $38,800, she said. So the Macon Promise is a substantial savings. In addition, students already enrolled at Milligan will not have a tuition increase next year, and housing prices at the Woods will remain the same. Due to the pandemic, she said, students might prefer to study closer to home, and the hope is that the Macon Promise will help make that possible. We really want to recognize and give back to the students who are from our own area and give them the benefit of studying in Decatur and hopefully pursuing lives and careers in Macon County afterwards, Chupenis said. The plan is for the initiative to be available for the foreseeable future, said President Jim Reynolds. So the kids who are in high school or even eighth grade now will be able to benefit from it when they're ready for college. Families are having financial issues, and we need to be a responsible partner to help them through it, Reynolds said. Students are trending to want to stay closer to home, and we want to provide the opportunity to attend a nationally recognized university in their own backyard. We thought Macon County students deserved the opportunity. Students in the university's Macon Matters program, which offers a $22,000 scholarship to Macon County first-year and transfer students, can work with the financial aid department to determine if staying in Macon Matters or transferring to Macon Promise will be better for them, Reynolds said. Students can begin applying immediately at milligan.edu/apply. And applications are free, Reynolds said, and students are no longer required to provide SAT or ACT scores as part of their application. Family Falls Short in Contest by Jeanette Beckett, Forsyth. The Macon County family competing for the NBC Today Show costume contest will not be appearing on Friday's program. Ashley and Samuel Kirby from Forsyth, along with their 11-month-old son Maverick, were among Wednesday's four competitors taking part in the show's costume contest. The results were emailed to the family Wednesday afternoon. Ashley Kirby said she was thankful for the response they received from the family and friends. She credits her community for the experience and spreading the word to get more votes, she said. Even though we didn't win, we feel like we are number one with all the support from the media and the community. The Kirby family was dressed as a beekeeper, a queen bee, and a busy bee. Each day during Halloween week, the show's producers present four families from around the country to show off their costumes and tell their stories. Viewers vote for their favorite costume on the show's website. The winners from each day will appear on Friday's show for the chance at the grand prize. Activity spotted at Iranian nuke site. Dubai, United Arab Emirates. Iran has begun construction at its Natanz nuclear facility, satellite images released Wednesday show, just as the UN nuclear agency acknowledged Tehran is building an underground advanced centrifuge assembly plant after its last one exploded in a reported sabotage last summer. The construction comes as the U.S. nears Election Day in a campaign pitting President Donald Trump, whose maximum pressure campaign against Iran has led Tehran to abandon all limits on its atomic program, and Joe Biden, who has expressed a willingness to return to the accord. Heightened tensions between Iran and the U.S. almost ignited a war at the start of the year. Since August, Iran has built a new or regraded road to the south of Natanz toward what analysts believe is a former firing range for security forces at the enrichment facility. Images from the San Francisco-based Planet Labs, Inc. show. Refinery attack. Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro said Wednesday that a large oil refinery suffered a terrorist attack as his government struggles to provide domestic fuel to the nation amid a historic political and economic crisis. He gave few details of the alleged attack. Wildfires. Calmer weather on Wednesday helped firefighters beat back two wildfires that drove nearly 100,000 Southern Californians from their homes amid fierce winds and extremely dry conditions. Some residents were expected to return to their homes on Wednesday. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Herald and Review for Thursday, October 29th, 2020. Please stay tuned.